All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 93 in this American History Program of History at Our House for the elementary class. This is our last lecture of completely new material. From this point on, well, other than history through art, where we have one more painting to look at, what we're going to be doing is primarily reviewing and putting everything together into a nice complete package, or an integration is the technical word for that. So anyway, the last topic that we have to discuss is this so-called War on Terror that is happening right now. And I say so-called for a few reasons. One of them is because when you woke up this morning, did you hear gunshots outside of your house? Did you have to put on a gas mask? Did you have to defend yourself while walking the dog? All of those are rhetorical questions, of course, because the answer is obviously no. And Patrick, in particular, remember, just a few nights ago, there were a series of really loud booms, and they woke you up. Did you think they were bombs?
Well, they sounded more like some super thunder strike.
Yeah, of course, you knew that it was a thunderstorm. We had an amazing thunderstorm here a few days ago.
Could have caused a blackout.
Yeah, it didn't cause a blackout. But anyway, my point is this, right? It's pretty unlikely that anyone in this class has a strong feeling of actually being involved in a war right now. Right? Now, it might be that one or two people, I really doubt it, but it might be that somebody here has a feeling that you are involved in a war. But in an important way, the War on Terror is an unusual war. It's different than any that has ever been before. And it's a little bit more like the Cold War that I and your parents will remember, in that it's not a war like World War I or World War II, where millions of people are dying in a few short years and everybody's involved. It's extremely violent and there's a threat to your personal life at every moment. It doesn't feel like that. So you might be, as a young person in this world, you might be wondering, in a way, what is this thing? Why does Mr. Powell talk about war on terror? And what is the idea of having even naming the time that we are living in that way? When you're done with your history lessons today, you're just gonna go to the park and play, right? Or go to the pool or get on your bike. And then life is really quite normal, isn't it? I think that it would, I suspect, nobody has jumped out and caught me on this point that I keep using this expression, war on terror, and nobody's saying, well, Mr. Powell, I really don't feel like there is a war. But I bet that is pretty much the case, that everybody here has kind of at least a question mark in their mind. Is there really such a thing, what is it we're talking about if we use this expression war on terror? In fact, I find that expression to be quite a problem. As a historian, I have other reasons for not being very happy with the term war on terror. I don't think it's a good description of the situation that we are in, which is why the title of today's lecture is a little bit of a mysterious title. And I was secretly hoping that somebody would shoot their hand up and say, Mr. Powell, what do those words mean? But I suspect that you guys are just waiting and you're expecting me to reveal what they are going to be. But notice that the title of today's lecture is not The War on Terror. The title of today's lecture is an expression that I use. I've never heard anybody else use it. So it is, sometimes in History at Our House, you get things that are absolutely unique to Powell history. And this is one of those things. So I call the time that we are living in by a different name. I call it the Islamist entanglement. And that is a very specific word. The word Islamist is a very interesting word. It's obviously related to the word Islam, but it's not the same thing. And then we have the word entanglement. Isn't that a strange word? Why would anybody use a word like that to describe a time in history? Okay, so that is kind of what I intend to talk about today, is to help you think of what's going on today a little bit outside the normal way of looking at it. Because, as you know, I don't think the normal way of looking at history is good enough. So that's why I teach history at our house the way that I do. And part of that means I don't think that all the terms we use are necessarily good enough, that most historians use are necessarily good enough either. So if I see one that works better, I'm going to use it. So, Rosetta, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay. So, let me tell you now, well, of course, you should be anticipating and eagerly on the edge of your seat wondering what each of these two words is. And so I'm going to go ahead and help you to understand that. And I'm going to start with the word entanglement, because we're talking about a particular entanglement. And everybody here should be able to get us started on that one. What do you think when the word entanglement leaps out at you from the title of the lecture? What do you think of when you think entanglement? Abby?
Well, I think of something being tangled.
Which means what? What would be an example of something that gets tangled?
Well, string, maybe.
A string, or how about a power cord? That's always frustrating, right? When your computer laptop power cord, as I have one, gets tangled up. Oh, that's frustrating. When your hair gets tangled up, right? That's frustrating. Okay, getting a tangle, right, is definitely, that's kind of the idea here. But why am I using it to describe history? Can history get tangled up? So that's kind of why I'm using it. Now, I'll show you right here, right now, why I'm using this word. And guess who I got it from? The best guys I've ever known. The founding fathers are the ones that used it. Didn't know that, did you? And we're going to start with George Washington. And George Washington, in his farewell address, we know that he said that the United States should minimize political connection with other countries. And he used the word entangle. So here I'm going to go and pop down to the part of the speech that George Washington was making when he was done being president. He said, now remember, back then they were talking about Europe. So whenever the founding fathers talk about Europe, what do we have to do in modern times? What's important to do when we are kind of understanding what the founding fathers said? Because back then, the only important thing was Europe. Is that the case today? So what do we... the answer is no, but what do we have to do about that, Rosetta?
We have to think of the present? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good answer. And in that present, what are other important parts of the world other than Europe?
America.
Of course. Okay, what else?
Asia,
very good answer. China and places like that, India, Japan, right? Those are other important places. The Middle East is another one. So that's what we have to understand, is that to the founding fathers, the only important place was Europe. But we have to kind of translate into the present here, right? So let's go ahead and look at what George Washington said. He said, "Why, by interweaving our destiny with that of any part of Europe." So nowadays, if we were to read George Washington's speeches, we have to say, by interweaving our destiny with any part of the rest of the world, because that's the way we live nowadays, entangle our peace and prosperity in the toils of European ambition, rivalship, interest, humor, or caprice. So what's he saying there? Imagine American history is kind of like a strand of hair, and what happens? What's he saying here in this idea of an entanglement? Abby, go ahead.
He's saying that, well, we shouldn't get our strand of hair entangled with Europe's strand of hair.
I'm sorry, Abby. I'm going to ask that again because I'm starting to have a little bit of a neighborly noise here. So I'm going to take a brief pause and ask that question again. I'm really having a frustrating time lately. There's a lot of renovations and construction going on in my neighborhood, and it just makes it really difficult to manage. And I have to just go to a different room sometimes. So give me that sec, and we'll resume. Okay, so let's see. We'll close that door. Okay. So, sorry about that, guys. So, let's get back to the question once again. So, Abby, again, remember my question was, okay, what about this idea of getting America entangled? What was your answer there?
Well, my answer was that George Washington is basically saying, you know, why should we get our strand of hair, the American history strand of hair, entangled with the European?
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a good metaphor, right? So it's just like that feeling of getting your hair tangled. It's painful. It's annoying. It's troublesome, right? And there's these different strands of culture out there in the world, and they're not. We're better off having them kind of side by side in a nice, neatly combed hair rather than a giant tangle where everything is mixed up with everything else. That's exactly the meaning. And Thomas Jefferson completely agreed, as did the other founding fathers, of course. We know the Monroe Doctrine. And Thomas Jefferson also used this expression. So this is his inaugural address. Inaugural means it was when he was starting to be president, right? The farewell address of George Washington is when he was leaving the presidency. When Thomas Jefferson was arriving in the presidency in 1801, he said the same thing. Look at this expression here, right? He said, the goal of American government should be equal and exact justice to all men, and so on and so forth. And then in friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. That's a very strong statement, isn't it? None. So this is the idea of the Founding Fathers. This is where I got the idea of an entanglement. Because the United States very much is entangled today in the affairs of the Middle East. We have, in part of the Cold War, created some entangling alliances, the exact kind that Thomas Jefferson was warning about. And as George Washington warned, our peace and prosperity is entangled. That means we have less of those things. They're kind of ruined. They're wrecked. We have a lot of problems in terms of maintaining those because of the entanglement with the Middle East. All right, so what we have talked about Israel, we've talked about the Cold War and protecting the Middle East from communist Russia, we talked about the need to get oil. Those are all different reasons that America has got entangled. But now we need to talk more specifically about the entanglement. And, well, remember that the title is Islamist Entanglement. Okay, this is the situation. And we know, of course, that, well, it has to do with the Middle East. That has been our geographical focus. And like we did before, you know, if you type in Middle East on the map, and you get this region, right? Now watch this. If you go from Middle East and instead you Google map of Islam, look what you get. Now go back and forth. See this? See this? What do you see? Abby?
I see a really big empire.
Well, yes, now it's not an empire because the lines here are different countries with different governments. So, no, not quite. This is a map of the people that follow the religion of Islam, countries that where the most of the people in those countries are Muslims. Okay, but the only point of showing you these two maps is that the Middle East is the place where people are Muslims. And that makes sense because the religion was created starting in this area right here. We have this spot called Mecca, and that had to do with the life of Muhammad and so on, right? And you can see that it spread out from that area. And yeah, there was an empire and stuff like that. And that's partly why that people in these regions follow the religion of Islam. But the point here is that being entangled in the affairs of the Middle East means being entangled in the affairs of Islamic civilization, a part of the world where people follow the religion of Islam. Now, America is a country that has religious freedom. So why should that be a problem? Right? You can be a Muslim in the United States and you do not have to fear violence. And it's pretty amazing. It really is amazing. Jewish people, Muslim people, Christian people of all different kinds, unreligious people and so on. Everybody is living side by side. And the amount of religious violence is shockingly almost nothing. Like it's so little, right? So if a country of religious freedom is entangled in the affairs of a religious civilization, should that be a problem? Would you think that that would be lead to a problem, Abby?
I might think so, because a religious civilization would be, like, religious civilizations want to enforce their religion on everyone.
That is exactly the challenge, is that if we talk about Islamic civilization, that means that people who accept the religion of Islam are living in an organized society that's very large, as we see, with a lot of different people that accept the religion. Many of those, and here's where it really gets entangling, many of those people do not accept the idea of religious freedom. So, the United States is entangled in the affairs of a part of the world, of many, many people, where there is a really strong split between people that do accept the idea of religious freedom, or at least are willing to live with it. And this makes the tangle even greater, because in the United States, there are Muslims, for instance, who accept it and probably who value it quite greatly, quite strongly, and have decided to be Muslims in America. Because like the Christians in America, they see the value of freedom. But on the other hand, in the Middle East, that is not the case. In this part of the world that you're looking at, that is not the case. Too many, a large number of the people that are living here do not believe in that. And this is causing the United States to have great difficulties in relating to people who live in this part of the world. And it's leading to this phenomenon of terrorism. Right? Because we talked about terrorism. We talked about the idea of people being violent against others, because they want to make them afraid. And in particular, terrorism is connected to Islam because some people in Islam are really angry about the United States, a country of freedom and so on, kind of telling them what to do, policing their part of the world, and they want to use terrorism to stop it because there's pretty much nothing else they can do. The United States is too powerful. And just recently, the war on terror, this phenomenon of terrorism came to America again. It came to Texas in particular. In Texas, there were two terrorists that went to a convention where people were looking at cartoons. And they wanted to kill everybody there because they were looking at cartoons. Now, they did not succeed. They were shot by the police. The terrorists did not succeed. But just a few months ago in Paris, France, 12 cartoonists were killed by terrorists because they drew cartoons. Now, this must be shocking to you, right? Who here does not like cartoons? That would be, if anybody put their hand up, I would be shocked. Who here does not look like cartoons? So what? How can that be? How could somebody want to kill somebody else for drawing cartoons? Well, it turns out the cartoons were of Muhammad. In other words, they were depictions of the creator of the religion of Islam. And to people who follow the religion of Islam, it's insulting to draw a cartoon of Muhammad. They get very upset, very strongly upset. And to the point where many of them are violent about it. So again, they don't accept the idea of freedom. And when it comes to religion, this is what freedom means. When it comes to religion, it's Thomas Jefferson that is the world's greatest expert among all of the founding fathers and so on. And notice what Thomas Jefferson had to say. This is one of Thomas Jefferson's great quotes about religious freedom. He said, "It does me no injury." That's a great word, injury. "For my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." So, differences of opinion or differences of belief are not violence. Even if they are insulting, even if you feel angry or upset about them, that's not the same thing. If somebody, and people in the West, and in America in particular, have accepted this version of living together in society. Because if somebody draws a cartoon of Jesus in America, people might get upset. But they will not kill that person. But if you draw a cartoon of Muhammad, a Muslim terrorist will almost certainly try to kill you. So, this is one of the parts of the Islamist entanglement. The idea that America is trying to police this part of the world, the Middle East, where people are Muslims, and a lot of Muslims do not accept the idea of religious freedom. Now, what makes this even more of a tangle, right? Because this is why I think it's such a great word and why it's my favorite description. What makes it even more of a tangle is that there are so many Muslims that do accept it and that live peacefully with each other and with people who are not Muslims. So there are a million Muslims in the United States today living peacefully. Here's a fascinating fact. There are 2 million Muslims living in Israel, a country that most Muslims would like to destroy. But there are 2 million Muslims living in Israel peacefully. So that it would be crazy. It would be really frighteningly crazy to suggest that those people deserve to be attacked in some way. Right, just because they're Muslims. I have taught many Muslim students from Muslim families in history at our house and in my career, and I would never wish them to be hurt or killed just because they are Muslims. And that's part of the idea of religious freedom. Is I don't want to hurt people because they disagree with me. I believe in disagreement. That, to me, is very important. You have to have disagreements in life in order to figure out what's really true and what isn't. That history is very clear on. In societies where people are free to disagree, life is better. Very simply. And so, this is the entanglement that the United States is in. It is trying to police a part of the world where that is not true, and yet, of course, where many people there would prefer to live in peace with people of other religions and so on. And so I call this situation the Islamist entanglement. And everybody's still waiting for me to tell you, okay, what about that other word? Now we know entanglement, right? We got the tangled part. Because it's so complicated and it feels really difficult to sort it out. It doesn't really feel like a war. It feels like a tangle. Which is what it is, because it's kind of confusing and difficult to understand and unpleasant to talk about, and it seems so strange that people who draw cartoons would be hurt, and that's the tangle. And people disagree about it, so on, and yell at each other on Facebook and stuff, and that's the tangle. So it has to do with this idea of Islamism. So remember, I called it the Islamist entanglement. I did not call it the Islam entanglement or the Islamic entanglement, because that would mean that it has to do with the religion of Islam, which people have a lot of different beliefs concerning, just like people have a lot of different Christian beliefs, right? So it wouldn't make sense to say that. But there are people out there, starting with the religious leaders of Iran. In 1979, remember, what did they do? What did they do that is so important to the shaping of the modern world? Ayatollah Khomeini and his followers, who were terrorists in Iran, what did they do? That was the last thing that was in our class notes. Rosetta?
Didn't they capture Americans?
Yes, they took Americans hostage or prisoner, right, for well over a year. And this is what we call Islamism. The idea of having Islam, the religious leaders of Islam, in charge of modern governments, or making what's called a theocracy, that's Islamism. And so this is what America is now entangled in, dealing with the people within Islam that want that and that will use violence and terrorism to get it, while at the same time trying to live peacefully in the world with the peaceful Muslims that wouldn't do that and that are your neighbors and wouldn't hurt you. Talk about a tangle. That's the Islamist entanglement. So when you get to that part, you will get class notes about this this afternoon. It's going to take me a little while to finish them. And when you get to those questions at the end of your test prep, you'll see the issue of, okay, there's two kind of different beliefs in the Islamic world today. One is peaceful. One is not. And America is entangled in that area trying to police it. And that leads some of those people that want to have theocracy, the Islamists, to violence and terrorism because there's nothing else they can do because America is too powerful. Meanwhile, you have the more peaceful Muslims that you also have to figure out what to do with and how to relate to and so on. So since the attacks of 9/11, right, because this is our great set of this is our great anchor fact, right, which was an example of Islamist terrorists attacking the United States. The United States has been trying to figure out how to sort out this tangle. And well, what did it do? It invaded two countries in the Middle East. In 2001, the United States invaded and conquered Afghanistan. Let's go back to our map of the Islamic world. Here's Afghanistan. All right, so in 2001, the United States invaded and conquered Afghanistan because the leaders there of that country were Islamists and were supporting the terrorists, especially the very infamous terrorist leader, Osama bin Laden. So the United States conquered that country. And then in 2003, the United States invaded and conquered this country, Iraq. and as part of this so-called war on terror. Now, what happened when the United States invaded those countries is very interesting. It did conquer them. It used military force. It was a war, but the United States military is very powerful compared to anybody else. So it was a relatively easy war. But then, what happened afterwards is very interesting. Does anybody know what the United States has tried to do in Afghanistan and Iraq, countries that it has invaded as part of the war on terror? What has it done? What has it tried to do? Sadly, I have to say tried. Rosetta?
I'm not sure, but I think they tried to put a new government.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Right? They tried to follow Woodrow Wilson's idea to make the world safe for democracy. And some people have called this the Purple Revolution, which is kind of a funny title. But here's why. Because here are these Iraqi people, and notice that their fingers have this purple ink on it. Does anybody know why? Kind of a funny thing. When they went to vote, they had to get purple ink on their fingers. So they got to vote. They got to have a democratic government in their country because the United States helped them to have a democracy. But it's not working. It's falling apart. In Iraq right now, we have this terrible terrorist organization called the Islamic State creating havoc. And in Afghanistan today, we have again, just a constant struggle, and the government is begging the United States not to withdraw its troops, because when it does, it will be chaos, if it does. So this is, again, the Islamist entanglement, because people in these countries disagree over religious freedom. And in fact, most terrorism in the world is by Muslims against other Muslims. People in Iraq killing each other. People in Afghanistan killing each other. People in Iran killing each other. People in Saudi Arabia killing each other. It's terrorism by Muslims against other Muslims. Very sad. But we know, I mean, Christianity had this too way back in its past, right? To learn the value of religious freedom, the truth of religious freedom, is a difficult thing to do. Everybody's got to get there on their own, in their own way. It can be a long and very violent road. How is that going to happen in our world? We live in a world where the United States is the world police power. So, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? Who is going to create a world of religious freedom, if that is possible? Who's going to help the people that are Muslims in the Middle East that want religious freedom and stop the people in the Middle East that don't? That is the tangle. Some people would say, some Americans would say, the United States has to do it. It is the job of the world police power to make the world safe, not only for democracy, but religious freedom. Other people would say, no, we shouldn't tell people, other people what to do whatsoever. And people in America disagree very strongly on this. The thing is, that disagreement doesn't matter. That disagreement is not going to make the problem go away. The problem exists. That is the Islamist entanglement. So, I hope for you personally that as you live out your life, this will not strongly personally affect you, that you will not be harmed in your life and in your family life by terrorism. But I suspect that this is not a problem that will go away for a long time. I suspect that the Islamist entanglement will continue to be, probably for our entire lives, if not longer. So we will have to live with it. History is what it is, whether we like it or not. Of course, it does not have to be. People can change the world and make it a better place. The great challenge is how. Hopefully, you will continue to be excited by the questions of history and the challenges of history. And if you grow up to study history and continue your studies as an adult, I think you will come upon very interesting answers, and perhaps you can help change the world in that small way or in some big way, in a positive way, to help solve problems like this. It is possible. So, thank you for having been a part of the story of America up to this point and studying it with me here at History at Our House. We're at the close of our new material, as you know, and this is where the story ends for now. Of course, it doesn't end because our lives continue, and we will strive into the future to make the best life we can and pursue our happiness. I wish you the best in that. So we will do our test and we will wrap up this academic year and hopefully have a great summer and come back next year and continue to do it. So thank you, everybody. Good luck with your test prep. The last of your class notes are on the way today. And of course, we return in a couple of days' time for the final test preparation class. Sigourney, final thoughts for today?
I was wondering about this question, this bonus question number 17.
Mm-hmm.
That it says, what American ship was sunk before America's entry to World War I? And I put the Lusitania, but that's the British ship.
Oh, that's a good one that you notice. It wasn't literally an American ship, so good for you. Thank you. All right, well, that's a good question for Thursday. But anyway, and Wyatt probably has a similar question. Go ahead.
Point now, number three, is about 1947. And yeah, I'll discuss a good answer for that.
Okay, well, oh, you would like to have a pointer about the answer for the question of 1947? Is that the question, Wyatt?
I would ask kind of also every day we just like practice at home. And also we need a sentence for 1749, the Truman Doctrine.
Okay, if I understood, because that was breaking up a bit, unfortunately. If I understood, you want a sentence for explaining the Truman Doctrine? So what I would say was, President Harry Truman recommended that the United States should stop the spread of communism. Okay, that's basically it. If that didn't help, we'll pick this up on Thursday. Okay, Wyatt? So we're definitely over time here. So we gotta say goodbye for the moment, but we'll come back to that on Thursday. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
Bye.